Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program I explore the latest in an evolving consciousness that's emerging on this planet, a consciousness of open spirituality and evolution. So the last few weeks I've been focusing on what's really been out there in space. I've been doing a couple of UFO shows, and now we're going to go from the outer to the inner. And over the next couple of weeks, I'll be focusing on sexuality and how our culture and as individuals, we're evolving to express ourselves in a broader, sexual, more conscious way. Integrating sexuality and spirituality is the topic of tonight's show with Gina Ogden. And Gina is a sex therapist, family therapist. She conducts retreats and trainings, and she is coming to New York on November 12th. So, and that is going to be produced by the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy. Then you can look up that website as well. Gina, welcome.
Alan, I'm so happy to be here.
Well, you've done so much work, and I've actually been wanting to talk to you about many levels of your particular work, because it's obvious to me that sexuality and spirituality are integrated and go together, but it isn't obvious to a lot of people. Are you finding that's still true, that people don't get it?
People totally don't get it, and I have quite a history with it, because I started out as a sex therapist and was appalled at what I was finding when I was being trained. This is in the late 70s, that sexology was leaving out women, at least women as subjects. And when I began to write books about women and sexuality, I began to have audiences say, the women in your books are talking about spirituality as well as sexuality. And I thought, that's cool. I'll start researching it. And what I found was basically that there's a very strange language attached to sexuality and spirituality, that there's a kind of religious language which is very up there and serious. And then there's the so-called sacred sex people who are all about tantra and exploring all sorts of new ways to make love and get it on together.
I know, and I interview a lot of those people. There are a lot of them are my guests on this show.
Yeah, no, this is great. But other than that, there is this great void. Should we call them the purple states or something, where nobody puts the two terms together? And I decided to do a survey. This was in the late 90s, to see what would happen. And immediately 4,000 people signed up to do this incredible survey. And they gave me information, which I thought was really important, to call sexual science, to put into the lexicon that spirituality, how we feel, what sex means in our lives, how the vibrational properties of sexual experience are also part of sexual science, even though we may not be able to count and measure them the way that we can count and measure performance, like how many times have you had intercourse in the last week, month, year?
Wait, so, so people are talking about sexuality, of course, on many levels, and there's this, the physical act, and then there's the emotional connection, and then there's the spiritual connection. So there's at least three levels that you're dealing with as a sex therapist. Is that right?
Well, it's basically what I came out with, partly thanks to the survey and partly thanks to three decades of listening to clients is a notion that of sexual multidimensionality, body, mind, heart, spirit, that I put right onto a medicine wheel. And I will ask clients, I will ask colleagues, I'll ask anybody who wants to talk with me to tell me their stories from these perspectives, from a physical perspective, emotional perspective, mental perspective. What are the messages that you learned? And also from a spiritual perspective. What does all this mean in your life? How does it connect you with whatever power you see that's greater than you or greater than you and your partner, something beyond us, whether you call it God or goddess or wolf or tree or whatever. And once we have those stories, once we put all of those stories together, we have a notion of what it is, of what sexual desire is. Because so often a client will come into a sex therapist and they'll say, I'm not turned on, or my wife or my partner is not turned on to what I'm turned on. And we don't know really what turns people on, what sexual desire is, until we understand their whole story.
Wait, so let me understand that. We don't know what sexual desire is, but people know what they desire, right? I mean, they know what they want or what they think they desire.
They know what they think they want, and that isn't always what they want.
So that's why we get a lot of mixed messages in sexual and just emotional relationships. We say we want things, and then we push it away. And, you know, it gets very confusing. How do we get to underneath to find out what we really do want and what our partner really wants?
Well, this is where I take my so-called ISIS wheel and ask people to tell me their story from each of these perspectives. And sometimes they can be talking about their emotions, and they're really talking about the shoulds, what I should want, what sex should be, that comes right up from those messages in the culture that say things like, good girls don't, real men score, sex is dirty, sex, you know, you should perform all the time, whatever those things are, that they kind of subsume into their emotional being. And yet that doesn't really come from their heart. Maybe what they really want is, to be held and rocked like a baby. Maybe what they really want is to be out there flying with the spirit world. And that's what they want, sex. That's what sex is about for them. But they don't know. Because they think they want something else.
But there is also, I feel like, a basic need for people to have sex. And we're looking for a deeper connection in there, a fulfillment within the physical act, within pleasure of something beyond pleasure, you know? I think after we work through all those emotional situations, there's something that's very transformative and an awakening and opening to all that. I mean, you're saying that, but you're saying let's see how we can get there.
I'm absolutely agree with you that for me and in my work and my life and my vision, that sexuality and how we enter into it with ourselves, with other people, with in the natural world, whatever, is ultimately about transformation. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem is that in this culture, as you well know, science says one thing, morality says another thing, maybe myth or family myths say another thing about what sex is about or what it's supposed to be about. And so we have all of this conflicting stuff rattling around in our heads. And this is what I'm calling the hidden dynamics of sexual desire, which I'm going to be playing with in New York in a few weeks with my colleague Sylvia Rosenfeld.
That's right. That's November 12th at the Cultural Center. That's 419 Columbus Avenue in New York City. And you can go to the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy website. If you're going to be talking about the hidden dynamics, so when I want to understand, do we all have hidden dynamics? Is there something that we eventually get to heal and overcome, or is that always with us?
To me, Alan, it is all about awareness. And as I get older and older and older, I'm understanding more and more that healing isn't about fixing something that's broken so much as it is about consciousness, about becoming fully awake, fully aware, allowing ourselves to know whether it's what we want right now from our partner, or whether it's all that stuff that happened to us when we were a kid that maybe we've pushed underground so that we never have to deal with it. It's like we need to allow ourselves one of the very positive things about aging, if we can do it in relatively good health, is that it allows us the time and the space to become more and more open so that we stop sitting in judgment about our bad parents or about our bad partner or about our bad selves, and so that what we want simply becomes what we want. It's not a terrible judgmental thing. And then we can find ways to have what we want, whether it's sexually or what we eat or what we wear.
You know what you, I understand what you're saying, and it seems like you're dealing in a way with that emotional need place. But it also seems like a lot of sexual desire is based on hormones and that physical drive and that need for that kind of satisfaction that runs through your body sometimes.
It's interesting, the thing about hormones. Again, you're totally right. And one of the things I'm learning is that to a large extent, we can regulate those hormones, not even by taking drugs, but by how we feel and how we are and how we make our way in the world. As we feel more and more self-esteem, our hormones of desire are going to be self-regulating. And it's interesting, the sex research that's coming up out now, at least some of the cross-cultural research, is saying that the greatest predictor of great sex over the long term is this issue of self-esteem. If you feel good about yourself, your sexual satisfaction is likely to continue. And in my own survey, the respect which spanned the ages from 18 to 86, the sexual desire and satisfaction levels went up with every decade rather than going down with every decade. And when I mined the data, I realized it was because I was asking questions that sex surveys usually don't ask. They usually ask about performance instead of how does sex feel and what does it mean in your life. And as we grow spiritually, our sexuality becomes more meaningful. Even if we can't do all the physical things that we used to be able to do in our 20s. But in my survey, the 50, 60, and 70-year-olds were having a better time than the 20 and 30-year-olds.
But I'd be interested to know if that was with the same partner that it got better, or if people were divorced or widowed somehow, if that was different, if it was with different people as people got older.
It was across the board. For when I got a huge number of narrative additions to this survey too, and that's really where I went to mine this data. And people who had the same partner would talk about the kind of relational richness that they felt with these partners. I had one couple who described themselves as 74 years young and described their occupation as sexually active. So they would come in that category. And then there were other people who had many, many partners for a variety of reasons. And what they described was that they were learning to live more in the moment as they grew older, or not to keep seeking yet another perfect partner. So I'm not talking about polyamory here, which is a whole other subject. But
why not shows on that? Now, the other thing you do talk about is the return of desire. One of your workshops is called Getting the Sex You Want. And I mean, is that sort of contradictory to what you just said, in a sense, you know?
The return of desire and getting the sex you want is actually a teleseminar that I do with a wonderful colleague named Tammy Nelson. And my book is Return of Desire, and her book is Getting the Sex You Want. So we carry on a dialogue, basically, between these poles.
The return of desire, I mean, that's your part, right?
Yes.
Desire goes out, it's not just hormonal, but it's something to do with the relationship itself, and maybe the relationship to sex itself. You know, that's where a lot of tantra teachers start. What's your relationship to sexuality? And you covered that a little bit, but how do you then activate this return of desire?
Well, my feeling is that I call it the return of desire because I don't think desire ever is totally lost. We may, through whatever happens to us as kids or as adults or whatever, hormones, it may stray, or we may put it down, we may not recognize it. But to me, desire is like a prodigal daughter, if you will, that we can welcome back, and we can welcome it back in many, many, many ways. We can welcome it back physically, with our breath, with movement. We can welcome it back emotionally, with our hearts, relationally, with our partners, many or one partner. We can welcome it back mentally by rethinking some of those negative and screwy messages that we grew up with. And we can welcome it back spiritually by literally embracing the eroticism that is that is intrinsic in the divine, the eroticism that is in the earth, in the sky, in the relationship with the gods and goddesses, if that's what people worship, or in the planet. I mean, if you go back into history, clearly the relationship between the gods and the goddesses and the gods and the gods and the goddesses and the goddesses is that which was the creative force that created the universe. That's the story. That's that story, that part of the story.
That's interesting, because that does sort of bridge spirituality and, in a sense, mythology, as you mentioned, that part of the eroticism of nature, of the natural world, of the God. I mean, what does that actually mean, the eroticism? I mean, how do you develop an erotic connection to that?
Well, again, this is part and parcel to me of the return of desire. That as you develop a relationship with yourself, and this goes back to self-esteem, and a relationship with your own breath and with your own body, and you begin to feel the earth and feel the sky and realize that you can connect earth and sky through your body, through your breath, through your feelings, that the pulse that you are creating with that connection is essentially erotic. And what I mean by erotic here is not so much doing it, as in how many times have you had intercourse in the last week. What I'm meaning is that it is feeling. There is feeling flowing through all of your chakras. If the chakra system is how you understand feeling and energy, that you are being able to receive messages, pulses, feelings from the earth, from trees, from the sky, from nature, from anything around you, into the intelligence of your own body. And that, as a result, you're going to expand instead of contract. And I think so much that's said about aging, and certainly about sex and aging, the message is that as we grow older, we contract more and more and more. We get smaller. We shrink. We dry up. Our vaginas get dry. Our penises flop and shrink. And that doesn't have to be. That does not have to be. Because as we grow older, I'll just finish this and let you talk, we, in fact, and research is showing this, we become more and more spiritual. We have the potential to become more attuned to nature, and to spirituality, and therefore to our own bodies, because our own bodies are part of that.
Well, that's the connection. That's the spirituality, I guess, and our own bodies is where we have to start, in a sense, of connecting sexuality from the ground up, from the fact that we come into this world through the sexual act, and we come in as spiritual beings, as beings having a body. And so I think that's where you're coming from, as far as, you know, merging those two together. That we're spirit. I mean we're inhabiting these bodies as if they're clothing or suit, and then we are basically the energetic beings that are using it to have a physical expression here on Earth. But who we really are transcends the body, and I think that's the spiritual teaching for me, in a sense. Do you agree with that, or do you?
Oh, totally. You know, they're spacesuits. that we are spacesuits in a sense, and this is what we're here to learn about. You know, why are we here? We are embodied, and with whatever else our belief system tells us, whether this is the only life we have or whether we're going to reincarnate 700 times, we're here to figure this out in our bodies. And I come back in terms of sexuality and desire to the very basic question, what feels good and what feels bad? What do you want? What do you not want? And let's get into your story, because your story, Alan, is going to be really different from my story or from Sylvia's story or Diana's story or anybody else's story for a variety of reasons. So how do we begin to understand the story and those dynamics that make us who we are as sexual beings?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I don't know. It's, in a way, I mean, sex can be a big deal. It doesn't have to be a big deal. I mean, I guess it's part of an integrative being. It's an aspect of us, but it's not all of us, but it's an important part, that because it's a acknowledgement of the physical body, the sexuality. We are in the physical body. It's sort of the peak of our physical expression, but maybe I live a lot in my mind, and you know, I love the body, but I don't know, I love my thoughts too. And
maybe a client put it beautifully for me a number of years back. She said, you know, sex isn't everything, but it is a part of everything. And I love that view, that sex isn't separate from everything else. And this is where I have an argument with sexual science that says, oh, Masters and Johnson says you're supposed to do it this way. And I have an argument too with Bible thumpers who say sex is supposed to be this way. And I'm saying, wait a minute, why can't we define it for ourselves? And sex is not a commodity. It isn't something we have. It's something we are. It's like movement, or it's like breath, or it's like taste, or it's like feeling, or it's like anger, or love. It's an energy that is part of all of the rest of who we are.
But that, maybe that's the part I want you to fine tune a little bit more, is the sense that we know what touch and smell and feeling and anger, we know what that is. But when you use sex that way, or the word sex, or that we have that, it gets vague. Or I think it's about, you know, erotic pleasure all the time when you. So I'm trying to just get a little clearer on how you're using that sex, the term sex, in our all aspects of our being, you know?
I hear you loud and clear, and I think part of the problem is that the word sex, if I say sex, the light bulbs go off.
I think of intercourse.
What? Yeah, you think intercourse. Or if I say erotic, something, a whole other set of images go on. But if I say body, mind, heart, spirit, or if I say talk or walk your sexual story in terms of physical, well, physical, maybe sex is intercourse. Maybe it's masturbation. Maybe it's tantric breath exercises. Great. now talk about emotional. Oh, well, that's the rage that I feel with my stepfather who was abusive to me when I was 8. Or that's the love I feel for my present partner. Or, oh, emotion is when I open my heart and just feel wonderful. Great. Now talk about the mental or and judgmental aspects of sexuality. Right. Well, I was told all this stuff that I should and shouldn't do. And yet there's other stuff that I know because I've read it or I've heard it or I've experienced it that really sex is or physical, again, now I'm getting into the physical and emotional part, but that when we relate in this way, or for me, sexuality, somebody might say, really does feel like the highest expression of me as a person, and that's something that I can set beside the biblical injunctions that tell me what I shall not do. And then when I begin to look at the whole picture, invoking a more spiritual or a larger view, I can begin to put together, oh, if I can go back to the physical, if I listen to what my body really is saying, I can know that when I'm talking with you, Alan, I'm beginning to feel a little tense because I want so much to be able to communicate with you here in Cambridge, and you're in New York. And so this is expressed in my body, and this is what begins to happen as we begin to fine-tune our stories, body, mind, heart, and spirit. Go ahead.
No, I think you're doing a great job communicating, and I'm just, because I think you have a very sophisticated, in a way, complex understanding of what sex is. Let's say complex, but it's expanded. Your definition of sexuality is an expansion. I think it's something we all need to have if we're going to expand who we are as human beings. Because otherwise sexuality gets put into a really narrow box, and then you're either having sex or you're not having sex, and then it's like it becomes,
and then you're bad or good or right
or both ways. Whether you're having it or not, you're bad or good.
Yeah, but go ahead.
No, I like what you're saying because you're redefining the landscape, and you're acknowledging the person in a bigger way, that they're more than these social conditionings, and that sex can really include every act of our physical expression, a physical emotional expression. I think that's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, and it can be translated in any way that you like. I see it as maybe opening a window onto another landscape, and for each person, the landscape may be different, and the window may be different. So our task as therapists and sex therapists is to create a space, psychic space, physical space, if you will, where clients, colleagues, can find their own window and open it and describe their own landscape and step into that landscape that is hopefully larger. This is why I call my work Expanding the Practice of Sex Therapy.
Expanding the practice, because you work with sex therapists as well as just individuals? Is that?
Well, I'm more and more doing training, which is what this November event is about. and I do a lot of supervision and a lot of I run groups because so much information happens in groups, so much more information. The plenum, the stew is extremely rich, and we can work with what everybody brings in. And because this information is so complex, I usually bring it down. I use a shamanic technique to actually both simplify it and bring even more information. And I'll ask people, for instance, to bring two objects into a group or into a therapy session, one to represent a part of their sexual story that they want to keep and enhance and grow, and another object to represent a part of their sexual story that they want to let go of or move on from. And all of a sudden, the landscape becomes very much more interesting and descriptive, because we stop talking about this S-E-X word, quote-unquote, and we start talking about meaning and feeling and communication. So a woman might bring in that juicy mango to represent the kind of lush juiciness she feels with her lover. And at the same time, she might bring in some yellow plastic danger tape to signify that that's what things in her childhood were like.
It sounds like a lot of fun, those workshops you bring
They
in.
Are. They are.
I'm just curious, because you know which word we haven't mentioned is the O word, the orgasm. You know?
Ah.
And I, from what you're saying, it sounds like it's not such a big deal, although it is a sort of real merging, I feel, of body and spirit in those real peak moments. But what do you have to say?
I agree. In one of my books that actually preceded all of this spirituality work, I talked about a continuum of pleasure, orgasm, and ecstasy, and the notion that orgasm, I mean, researchers actually don't know what orgasm is, because they can't really measure it. They can do, you know, they can measure little blips on the Richter scale of whatever they have. But when you think about what orgasm is, it's a beyond being a muscle spasm that can be, or a series of muscle spasms that can be measured. It's a letting go. And that is meaningful to me. That connects us with spirit. I cannot tell you the number of people who have told me and who have written to me and who have written into the survey that it's a connection with God or goddess or wolf or tree, you know, that it changes their lives, that this is the true meaning of transformation, that something happens. It's not a goal in itself. And the problem I have with the word orgasm, rather like the word sex, is that it becomes a goal. It's an end in itself. And orgasm is an opening into possibilities. It's an opening into whatever you want it to be. And it can change your life. As one woman said, I feel so great, it's something I can take with me on the bus the next morning when I go to work. You know, that wonderful feeling of being open, of being expanded. And again, I come back now to the research on self-esteem. We can change our hormones. It's all connected.
With more self-esteem, you have more of the positive hormonal flow. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. And you feel juicier, and you feel like you want to be a sexual person, whether that means having a partner or not having a partner, whether that, however you perceive being a sexual person is. You're saying you spend a lot of time in your mind. That's a wonderful place to be sexual.
To be sexual in your own mind? In what way?
Yeah. I mean, think at the universal mind. It's huge.
But how could I be sexual in my own mind with the universe?
You can be erotic in your mind. Your conception of the world, how you conceive the world, can be relational, it can be juicy, it can be exciting, it can be all of those concepts that we attach to how many times do you have intercourse in the last week, month, year.
Well, you know, I do feel a lot of sexual excitement sometimes when I'm being really creative, as if all my chakras are open and it's just, charging up.
Of course.
Okay.
Sometimes I think my significant other is my computer when I'm in the middle of writing something. When I get a wonderful idea for a book, it's that my computer becomes my lover. I know that sounds a little kinky.
No, I like it. I can relate to it.
Yeah, good.
Right, because I think that's also what you're trying to tell me about the sex with the universe in my own mind. It's like that. The erotic movement is the expression of the creative act in whatever form it comes out of us as human beings.
Thank you. You've just said it.
But I'm getting it in this discussion. The more you hold the space of your, really lifetime of work and expansion, I feel myself expanding my own definitions of sex, sexuality, orgasm, in a sense. But, the thing about orgasm is that it is a goal for a lot of people. And it's not necessary, but it is also something we're all capable of achieving, no matter who we are.
Yeah, you've said two things, and I want to address each of them. One is about orgasm, but I want to first of all address this whole notion of holding space, because I think as healers, as writers, as therapists, sex therapists, whoever we are, human beings, lovers, partners, that for us to be able to hold space for another person or other beings and allow them to expand within that space is one of the holiest things that we can do. And I just so appreciate your ability to tune in and listen and allow yourself to expand in whatever ways that work for you.
I do this program so I can learn and expand.
We all find our ways if we're growing people. And the orgasm, I want to address your comment on orgasm as a goal. I think for some people, and particularly women people, who may never have experienced orgasm, that it does become a goal because they feel they're missing out on something, and they probably are. And so as a therapist, I would certainly address that for them. However, that needs to be addressed, whether it's that they need to let go of anger at their past or whether they need to fall in love with a vibrator or there are many, many ways to help people come to orgasm if they've never had it. That said, then there's what I call the so what factor. So you've come to orgasm. So what? You know, so you've eaten at a great French restaurant. So what?
Yes, so, good question. So what? Yes.
And so what do we do with that experience? Where does that experience take us? Where do we want it to take us? How do we relate to that with our partner? How can we help the world? Whatever. Again, everybody goes in their own direction. And that's why I come back to my basic ISIS wheel, which is named after integrating sexuality and spirituality, which is the title of my survey, but it's also the name that came up was the goddess Isis, who was initiator into the sexual mysteries. And it is a mystery. It's all a mystery. And sex is just a part of it.
But that so what answer, I don't think I really got what you meant. So what? We've had a great orgasm and eaten a great French. What does that do for us? So what's the so what about it?
Well, let's put it another way. So I hand you $1 million. So what? What are you going to do with that? What does that mean for your life? How does that change you? How do you feel as I hand you this stack of bills?
So I think you're saying the so what is that because our experiences expand us. It expands who we are. And when we have pleasurable experiences, more of ourselves as human beings can be appreciated and loved in a way. It's hard to love when you're suffering, but if you're feeling good and having pleasure and having orgasmic states, we can appreciate much more of life, and maybe that's the ultimate so what. I mean, that's what we're here for, is to appreciate life.
Yeah. Yes. And to own that in ourselves. So if I've never been able to come to orgasm and suddenly I can, I'm expanded. I'm bigger. I'm again remembering somebody who wrote after a workshop. She said, I feel bigger in every way, not fatter, but just bigger, as if I can occupy more space in the world.
That's good. I'm getting another piece there too. What you're saying is that we are here to be big, you know, to occupy, to take up the whole world, which expands our spiritual awareness, which is why we incarnated in the first place.
Exactly.
But let me ask you.
And if we don't get it this time, we're going to have to come back as an earthworm.
But what about personally? You don't tell me your personal thing, but in general, do women have more pleasure than men, or capable of more pleasure? I mean,
Come on.
Does seem like, that
there
women...
There is such a gender conversation that goes on around sexuality, and obviously there are some differences, but I think mostly there's the differences in how we're socialized. I'm sure you were socialized very differently because you were a boy than I was because I was a girl. And that again, back to my wheel, that kind of goes into that judgmental place. It goes into the whole wheel, physical.
But it's not judgmental. Women are more complex physiologically, and you know, maybe there is more pleasure centers there, or more, you know, I'm just putting it out there to a sex there. I'm just curious.
Well, there's actually a wonderful book by a friend of mine, Becky Chalker, called The Clitoral Truth, in which she really describes the whole clitoral system, which is supposedly bigger than whatever goes on in the male system. But, you know, if we compare spirits? Is your spirit bigger or smaller than mine? I don't think so. Is your potential bigger or smaller than mine? I don't think so. Is my pleasure or pain bigger or smaller than yours? I don't think so. I mean, I think what's important is that we listen to each other, that we own our own experience, communicate it as best we can, and listen to one another. And that in a nutshell, by the way, is my take on the hidden dynamics of sexual desire.
Oh, can you say it again?
I hope so. I think that what is important is that we fully own our own experience, that we do the best we can to communicate it to other people, partners, whoever, and that we do the best we can to listen to each other.
Yes, and I would also add that, you know, following up on my question, which was a little silly and a little like, because it's obvious that we're all have the same potentials, men and women, just in different forms, but there's also a lot of pleasure in seeing someone else receive pleasure.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
That's a big part of the dynamic, so if your partner is having a lot of pleasure, it's pleasurable, you know, it's fulfilling in that way.
It's so, the opposite of Schadenfreude. Yes, we want to revel in other people's pleasure.
Especially someone you're connected to and loving and someone that you're here to give pleasure to, you know?
Yes.
So in this workshop that's happening, again, it's November 12th in New York City, sponsored by the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy, ASP. Can you just tell me about the partner you'll be working with, Sylvia?
Yes, Sylvia Rosenfeld is a wonderful colleague who we've known each other for some years. We've wanted to work together, and are finally putting it together. She's also a sex therapist, and one of her basic orientations is imago therapy, which is about couples communication. And so the workshop that we've put together will be centered in, or the locus will be within the Isis wheel, body, mind, heart, and spirit. And we will be doing some of Sylvia's exercises, some of my exercises, in the context of that. And we will also be listening very definitely to the issues that that participants are going to be bringing in.
Okay, I get that. Okay, well, it sounds great. I'm really happy we had this conversation. Is there anything you'd like to just wrap up with and, you know, tell people about?
I would love to tell people about my website, because you can find anything that I'm doing now and forever on it. You can get to me through my name, Gina@GinaOgden.com. You can also get to it through its name, which is ExpandingSexTherapy.com.
This is not just for sex therapists, this upcoming workshop. It's for everyone, right?
It's for professionals who are doing work with individuals, couples, and whose interest is in expanding their knowledge of sex, sexuality. The subtitle of it is Transforming Clients' Limiting Beliefs About Intimate Connection. So it's really how to reach your clients. So many therapists are not trained to do sex therapy. there's this division between couples therapists and sex therapists. So we're saying, you know, if clients ask you questions about sex, there's a lot of stuff you can do, even if you're not a bona fide certified sex therapist and supervisor, which both Sylvia and I are. So, I mean, we're both really nice people. So we will take whoever comes.
Yeah, well, I know. It does sound like you're putting the sex back into sex therapy in a big way.
Well, we're putting the sex into couple therapy, and we're putting the couple into sex therapy as well, and the spirituality, too, and we're thrilled that the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy is sponsoring us.
Yeah, I'm very happy they are, too, and I'm on the board of that association foundation, so maybe I'll meet you at that upcoming workshop.
Well, why don't you come? Come as our guest.
Okay, maybe I will just come. You know, that I really like what you're saying, and you're so passionate about these ideas, and I can see you've really, you know, spent a long time thinking and playing and exploring this whole field, which is important to human beings.
Come as our guest and make sure that you pre-register, because otherwise you will not be allowed in the door. But I'll write to Diana, or you can write to Diana.
Well, let me see if I'm free that weekend, but anyway, we'll be in touch about that for sure. Maybe we'll even do a television interview while you're in New York.
That sounds wonderful. The next day, by the way, I'm going to be talking about sex and aging to the New York State Psychological Association, just down the street. So November 13th, I'm going to be doing that.
There's no age limit on orgasm, is there?
There is no age limit on orgasm. There, I believe I'm correct in saying that there have been sonograms of infants in utero having orgasms.
Ejaculatory orgasm? How did they know they're having orgasm?
Well, because their sex therapist doing it, so they've interpreted it as an orgasm. And I intend on my way out to have an orgasmic death.
Really? Well, how are you going to do that?
I'm surrounded by all of the people I love, chanting, holding my feet, whatever. I'll figure it out when the time comes. I'm not there yet.
But we should also have orgasmic life as well. You know?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Gina. I enjoyed it on many levels. So
this was delightful. Happy orgasms. Happy life.
I'm having one.
Oh, wonderful. In your mind, right?
And maybe my body. I don't know. I'll check. But
maybe they can talk to each other, body and mind. I'll see you Saturday, November 12th.
All right. Thank you very much.
And, terrific. Thank you.
I've been talking to Gina Ogden, whose website is... it's expandedsextherapy.com. And again, she'll be in New York in the workshop. Accessing our human desires for the Association of Spirituality, Psychotherapy Research, ASP, which you can add up. This will be posted on my website, newrealities.com, as well as here on CBSRadio.com. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. And if you want to reach me directly, email me at newrealities@christian.com.
Waking up in the middle of the day feels like a dream. Walking halls in the middle of the day.